Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. It's a phenomenon long noted by explorers and adventurers, calm sense presence during times of extremis, when human endurance is on a knife's edge. Well, my guest today, explorer John Geiger, wrote about this phenomenon several years ago in his bestseller, The Third Man Factor. Now, he wrote of the experience of extreme adventurers, mountaineers tackling Mount Everest or a long-distance solo sailor crossing an ocean. But when the book was published, Geiger heard from a flood of readers who had experienced the same soothing presence, or angel, as many readers referred to it, in traumatic events like car wrecks, combat, illness, physical and sexual assaults. The details varied greatly, but the stories were strangely similar in one sense, in how they occurred. When the person was giving in to despair, a calming, benevolent presence got their attention, focused them, and encouraged them, and helped them to safety. So Geiger investigated, looking for neurologists and brain scientists for answers. Yet there have been no answers in sciences, just a few hypotheses, which leads one to the mystical. John Geiger is the chief executive officer of the Royal Canadian Geographical Society and the author of 5 previous books. His latest is titled The Angel Effect, We Are Never Alone. It's published by Weinstein Books. He joins us today on Studio Tulsa. John Geiger, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
This new book, The Angel Effects, really follows on a phenomenon you first noted in your previous book, The Third Man Factor. And it is this phenomenon of a sense presence, an entity. It can form itself as an actual person. It can be a soothing voice. It can be all sorts of things that you noted in the book Third Man Factor, which was really about extreme adventures in which, you know, you're on Mount Everest and you're about to die and all of a sudden there's this sense presence. But what you found after the Third Man Factor was published was this was much more common than you first expected.
You're right. When I wrote the Third Man Factor, I was very much thinking of this as a phenomenon that explorers and people, you know, extreme adventurers experience. And the cases I found, and I found scores of them, you know, involved people like, you know, from Sir Ernest Shackleton as an example, or Charles Lindbergh, the early aviator, right up to Jerry Lininger, the U.S. astronaut who was on Mir, and then dozens of climbers and polar explorers and solo sailors. So it was very much, the conceit was very much around adventurous individuals, you know, and their experiences with this sense presence. And after I published that book, hundreds of people started contacting me and saying, you know, fascinated by your book, amazing, but, you know, this happened to me and I was in my living room. Or, you know, this happened to me but I was in a car accident. And I started going through these messages, and I it sort of woke me up to the reality of this phenomenon, that it really is a universal experience that any one of us potentially can have. And you don't need to be on Everest, summiting Everest, for this to happen.
Now, originally you've referred to it as the third man factor. I think now you would think of it as the sensed presence. What manifests both of these ideas?
Well, I mean, I think it's all the same thing, really. And to be honest with you, it's also, an experience that many people characterize as an angel or an angelic, you know, visitation or intervention. It all seems to follow a very similar pattern, and that is that people are in extremely stressful situations. Oftentimes, the stresses are multiple. It's not just that they're in a life-threatening situation, but also that they are very isolated or that they are starving to death. Or, you know, there's usually not just a single stress, but multiple stresses. And they feel a sense that an unseen being has intervened to help them, a presence. And this being is often dressed up as an angel, but it can also be a deceased loved one, or it can even be, and often is, not identified by the recipient, the person who's experiencing it. They will just feel that there's a powerful, loving, benevolent force that's there to help them and protect them and encourage them. And they will often credit this intervention with saving their life, or at least, you know, helping them to overcome seemingly insurmountable obstacles. So it's a very powerful experience.
at what point did you decide to write about this again? Because you've written about it in The Third Man Factor, and then all of a sudden you're following this up again with The Angel Effect. Was there an event in your own life or something that that certainly helped trigger this?
Well, you know, indeed there was. It was while I was actually working on The Third Man Factor, the first book on this subject, that I, you know, had an experience. I had I had twins. My wife and I had twins, and one of the twins, James, had a very serious heart condition called hypoplastic left heart syndrome. And he was critically ill from the moment of birth, and we went through a horrific week of medical, interventions, which the end of which was that he passed away. And it was a very difficult experience, as you can imagine, to go through losing a child, and just the manner of the experience was really hard on us both. And I was grieving for some months after that, and I was working, and it was during that period of, I guess, very slow recovery from grief that I had a sense that, a presence visited me, and I felt it was him, and it really helped me in a strange way to overcome the grief that I was still feeling. I must have been a lot more brittle than I had thought I was, and it just took me a long time to get over that loss, and having a baby sort of die in your arms is not an easy experience, but it's a kind of an experience that I guess over the years many people have had. It's sad as that is, but this visit, this presence experience that I had, helped me to overcome that. I felt more at peace finally. And I guess, I didn't include it in The Third Man Factor, although I did dedicate the book to him, because I just wasn't ready to reveal it myself. But when so many other people stepped forward, I just felt, I had to sort of complete the story. And, The Angel Effect, I think, is so compelling because it is, in a way, it's even more compelling than The Third Man Factor, because this book speaks to every one of us. The cases in here are people with substance abuse issues, people, women during childbirth, men and women who are severely depressed, people in car accidents, like plane crashes, people being raped, people being, physically abused in other ways. And in other words, all the host of terrible stresses and terrible experiences that we potentially can experience in our lives. And to know that this capacity is out there is, I think, a wonderful thing.
Now, I appreciate you sharing that story, because that's an emotional story for you. But I know, as a man of science, did you try to put a rational explanation on it at first?
Well, I've tried to put a rational explanation on this from the very beginning. I entered into the pursuit of this mystery believing that there would likely be a neurological basis for the experience. And what's interesting to me, in through now years of research and two books on the subject and a scholarly paper on the subject, that there really isn't a lucid, sustainable scientific argument for the experience. Now, it's not to say one doesn't exist, but it's interesting to me that we haven't been able to, through scientific investigation, and there has been serious research done in this area, we haven't been able to explain precisely what's happening to people, and that very much leaves, all possibilities on the table. What I have been able to show, I think, with these books is that this is a real lived experience. What I experienced was not, I think, a sign of, mental breakdown any more than any of these other cases that I document. It's rather an example of a real lived experience where, this externalized being does intervene to add, to lend comfort and support and guidance, and it's a very, very compelling idea that this is a real lived experience that many people have, and you and some of your listeners at some point in your lives either have had this experience or potentially can have this experience. So I think that is sort of the great revelation of the research, is that this is really happening to people.
The first few stories in the book recount a woman who was involved in a car accident and started to panic because she couldn't move out of her car. And a person grabbed her hand, sat next to her, told her to calm down, to breathe slowly. She slowly overcame her panic. Eventually, paramedics arrived. she was unaware of this at the time, but the moment they got the jaws of life to open up her little car that she was in that was broadsided, that entity disappeared, but she was almost sure it was a nurse or somebody, an actual person.
Yeah.
She went into surgery. It was a miracle she survived, and she only survived with lots of surgeries and lots of therapy afterwards. She asked, you know, who was the person, and there was nobody around. Another story is of a guy out surfing, and he sees all of a sudden off of the coast of Australia, he sees a great white. The great white is going after him, hitting him, and he's actually hit several times by the shark. He's fighting the shark off, but he's a long way from shore. He is panicking at first, and then all of a sudden there's a voice that says, calm down, just paddle as fast as you can, and he makes it into shore. He's certainly there. He thought there was somebody nearby or a disembodied voice. So these manifestations are very different. I mean, it can be an actual person. It can be a person from history showing up. I know a guy walking across a big fjord somewhere up north. All of a sudden, he finds himself in the midst of a flash flood. He was very religious. He thought he saw Jesus.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, it shows up as something different every time, doesn't it?
It does. I guess my belief is that people are essentially having an experience with a sense presence. In other words, they're feeling the presence of an externalized being, and they then interpret it through their own sort of lens, their own kind of cultural or religious lens. So some people will identify the source of their help and comfort as being, you know, a religious figure, regardless of what faith group they belong to, because it's not only Christians, by any stretch of the imagination, that have these experiences. It's every faith group imaginable describes, you know, people describe having these encounters. So, but again, if they're atheists or highly skeptical individuals, they might attribute a different identity. So, you're right. The outcome is always the same, that an externalized force or being has intervened and has given them directions, guidance, comfort, helped them, to the extent that, as you say, that they feel like they've had their hand held. So they actually are feeling a physical sensation beyond everything else. And the result is always the same, that this benevolent being is the key to their survival. So, it is interesting to me that there's these different interpretations as to what the being, who the being is. And, of course, angel is the word that comes up most, most often. People who have this, and you can understand why. I mean, culturally, we're aware of angels. We're aware of the tradition of angels. So if you feel like you've been helped by somebody and in a life and death situation, who's somebody who isn't really there or doesn't appear to be there to anyone else, I guess it makes sense that you might assign that identity to it.
Now, at first you look for a neurological explanation, and there are several theories. What are the theories of why this occurrence happens, the neurological basis of the brain taking over in certain ways and sort of, if not hallucinating, at least providing a path in a time of great stress?
Well, what's interesting is there are a number of different neurological explanations, and also psychological, the Julian James theory of the bicameral mind, the right brain, so the God, omnipotent brain, is speaking and issuing directions to the left brain, which is the percipient side, and which is taking in this information, and so the brain and reading this is coming from an external source, when in fact it really is just the brain talking to the brain, and the hemispheric differences. That's one of the theories. There's the so-called HAB, the hypersensitive agency detection device. It's a part of our brain that is very ancient, and it evolved as a way for humans to perceive threats, external agencies, aka predators or enemies, and that this is a hypersensitive, because it needs to be. It's before you're conscious of somebody being there, this is actually reading that there's something or someone there. So, one interpretation is that this is a misfiring of HAD, that HAD is picking up something, and you are assigning it a benevolent identity. So again, there are a number of brain theories that might explain this. There's even been some research done in a clinical setting where using electrical stimulus, part of the brain, that a presence has been evoked. So using electrical stimulus, the person was actually saying, I feel that there's someone here with me in the room. This person's sitting right next to me. When in fact there was no one there, and you remove the stimulus, oh, he's gone now. So that's interesting. Except in none of these cases is it can be explained as a benevolent force, this tremendous force for good that people are describing of being symbolizing love and care. And again, each of these cases I talk about in the angel effect are people who are describing an extremely benevolent, truly angelic in terms of its mission to help you and support you entity. And it's hard to understand that in relation to the brain. And why would the brain also, this is one of the questions I haven't been able to figure out, why would the brain trick you into believing this is an externalized entity? Mm. Why wouldn't you just conclude, my brain is now kicking in and I'm getting the instructions I need and I'm going to be fine and I'm feeling better and I'm feeling comforted? But you invariably, it's always an externalized force.
That is a really interesting question. As I was starting reading these stories, I started thinking about the fight or flight, I think what you alluded to earlier. It's when the fight takes over the flight mechanism is sort of, I think, might provide some understanding. The idea that in a fight situation, you need a good coach, and maybe that coach is provided by an outside entity. I don't know. And, of course, that's the one thing you come out of this book is she says, we don't know what this is, but we just know that it's happening an awful lot. My guest today is John Geiger. He's the Chief Executive Officer of the Royal Canadian Geographical Society and the author of his latest book is The Angel Effect. It's published by Weinstein Books, and he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. You started getting these stories. How did you go about researching them? Because I assume you just didn't take them at face value. You did some interviews and asked folks about it and asked folks around them. So give us a sense of how you began researching all these stories, because it ranges from Israeli soldiers who, that was one of the most interesting things, is a group of them saw this presence. Is that right?
Well, that's right. And that's another interesting phenomenon that is very hard to hard to account for, and it's not just in that instant, but a number of cases I've looked at, including some involving climbers, people, and in fact, the most famous probably example is Ernest Shackleton during his momentous escape from Antarctica, when his ship Endurance was trapped in the ice, and Shackleton, this great Antarctic explorer, and two other men made this harrowing journey over 1,000 miles to escape and to then send rescuers for the rest of their party, and they were finally, ending this heroic trek and crossing a mountain range on a little island in the South Atlantic called South Georgia. And the three of them all felt that there was a presence. There was another being accompanying them, and they didn't, none of them spoke about it to each other. And it was only later that they all realized that they had had exactly the same experience, that there was somebody else there helping them. And, I've documented a fair number of examples of this. So, one theory explaining that phenomenon is that it's a shared hallucination, in the sense that there's a power suggestion. One person says, it's funny, I had this strange experience, and right away someone else picks up the cue. Oh, yeah, I had a strange experience too. And then, they sort of piece together what that's one explanation. But another explanation is they all actually were suffering a terrible stress at exactly the same time. They all had reached their limit, and they all, encountered a presence experience. And what they described is what happened, and it's not the power of suggestion. It's a real lived experience. And I tend to look at these cases very carefully to see if these people are, can be taken seriously. And the cases I include are all very serious people. They're very successful people. They're very earthy people. They're not the kind of people who, are looking for angels in their lives. They just are people who've been in terrible crises and have had help and are trying to grappling to understand the source of that help.
So you mentioned earlier, you kind of answered the question about the research, but how much research would you do to find out, you know, to research their story to make sure that this is what really happened in their life?
Absolutely. I mean, I looked at plane crash, FAA reports. I talked to several people involved in some of the cases where, you know, where there are others who were able to verify, what had happened so I did everything I could do. It's not the kind of thing, to be honest with you, that people, you know, high-functioning people make up. There's a smell test you have when you interview people, but it's not the kind of thing that people make up. To be honest with you, I feel that likely this is this phenomenon is really underreported. I think that, in fact, in a number of cases, I had great examples I was not able to include because the people just didn't want to. They didn't want their experience to be published. It was just too personal. But they, you know, so I think it's really a phenomenon that's much more common than we can know, and that's because a lot of people just don't really want to come forward with it, you know, for one reason or another.
Is there a sense of embarrassment a lot of times about?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, there absolutely is. And you know, I even looked at my own experience. You know, I had the experience when I was working on the third manufacturer, but I chose not to include it. I dedicated the book to James, but I didn't include my own experience because I was sort of grappling with, well, did it, you know, was it the power of suggestion? Because I was working in this area, was that coloring, you know, a kind of a mental state that I was in? And so, you know, was it somehow, you know, I still, you know, who knows? But at the time, I didn't feel comfortable. It was also felt highly personal, I wanted to protect it. It was my story. It was my experience, and I wanted to kind of protect it. Even from people very close to me, it was only sort of with time that I sort of felt comfortable with allowing it out, taking it out of the box, kind of. And so that's a feeling, you know, a number of these people actually had to talk into letting me, you know, use their cases, their experiences. It wasn't something that, you know, they more wanted, when they came to me, it wasn't for, oh, I want to be in a book. It was that, my God, this happened to me, and now for the first time in my life I can understand and put some context around this experience, which I've always kept really to myself, you know?
Yeah. I was really struck by the ocean swimmer who got caught in the surf in a riptide.
Yes.
Because that was one of the most unusual manifestations, I think, of all the ones in the book. There's an ocean swimmer. He gets caught. The surf is bigger than he thought when he gets in. And he finds up, you know, the first wave hits him, and boom, he's knocked all the way down to the bottom. He's beat up. He comes up for air. He gets a mouthful of water. He coughs so he doesn't get good air. The next wave batters him, and he's thinking, oh, I'm going to die. This is the riptide's pulling him out to sea. He looks around. There's nobody out there to help. Then all of a sudden, there's a little man on a floating mat of some sort, or like a float of some sort.
Yeah.
And he says, hey, looks like you're having some trouble. Grab a hold. We'll get in. He catches the next wave perfectly and body surfs in. You know, and he looks around to thank the guy, and there's nobody anywhere.
Yeah, and in that case too, it's so striking. In some of these cases, you know, there's a mental picture of their, even though it's a really an invisible being, an entity that isn't, you know, there in a tangible way. They do often or sometimes create a mental picture. And in his case, you know, his rescuer was he said he looked like a bald welder. He was kind of a flabby older guy. You know, really white skin, didn't look like he'd been in the sun much. But he was gone. He wasn't there at all. There was nobody there. And so, you know, it's profoundly mysterious. Yet he felt that he received very tangible help, you know, that without that little floating raft and without that bald welder, he would be dead. So it's just hard, you know, it's hard to account for these experiences. It's hard to... They're not all identical. As you say, in some cases it's a voice. In some cases there's just a sense of a being there, but there's not an image of them and no identity. In other cases, it's something as vivid as this guy's, or the case of the American soldier who is on his way on a huge driving trip up to Alaska from California and was in a horrific storm and. In the Canadian, in British Columbia, and on a mountain highway, and no visibility, and late, middle of the night, really in a terrible, stressful situation, feeling that he was going to lose, that the car was going to go off the road, and suddenly was given very explicit directions. You've got to turn to the right now. Okay, keep going. You know, very specific driving instructions over his shoulder by a woman he described as a Mexican cleaning lady. So while many of the cases, people I speak to say, I have no doubt about it, it was an angel. And some will even say, I felt I could see a glow. I know it was a woman and she had blonde, it's almost like a stereotypical description of how we culturally, portray an angel. But then you have the Mexican cleaning woman or you have the bald welder. So, the rescuers take different forms and sometimes they're forms of deceased loved ones, that kind of thing. But the point is that they all perform the same function. That is, that they help us through these terrible life and death struggles at some of the most stressful moments of our lives.
The name of the book is The Angel Effect. My guest today is John Geiger, the Chief Executive Officer of the Royal Canadian Geographical Society. And one of the things you come away with, you throughout the book, you say, okay, is there a neurological understanding? Is there brain research that can help understand what these people experience? And at the end, you just say, it's okay not knowing. We don't know.
Yeah.
And we may not know for a long time or ever.
Well, that's the point that I came to. I really struggled to understand and explain away this as, wouldn't it be nice if we just could say, yeah, this is part of the brain, this is what the brain does in these situations, here's how it does it, here's how it works, here's the feeling it creates, because then we could all tap into it all the time, And the funny thing is that there are ways that you can actually evoke and access this, but they're not simple, they're not simple like that. They involve, in the case of the spirit quest of the North American Indian, where, you're out in a, or the early desert monks, who put themselves in terrible states of deprivation and starvation and dehydration and, they flagellated themselves. They did everything they could do to make themselves in the most pitiable state. They were alone, isolated, and they would invariably encounter a presence that would help them. But then, others have shown that through prayer, and I talk a little bit about the centering prayer, which is a Christian sort of meditative prayer practice, that you can actually reach this point. So I think there are ways that we can get in touch with this. But you're quite right. At the end of the day, I came out of it feeling like, we can't explain it. Maybe it is an angel, because how can you prove or disprove the existence of angels anyway? Or maybe it is a neurological response to, extreme stress, or maybe it is a psychological coping mechanism, but whatever it is, it's real. It's a lived experience. It's not people pretending. It's something that really happens to them, and it has a profound effect on their lives. And isn't that enough? Isn't that a powerful enough realization? I think it is.
John Geiger, I appreciate your time today. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much. It was real pleasure. Thank you for your time.
John Geiger is the Chief Executive Officer of the Royal Canadian Geographical Society and the author of The Angel Effect. It's published by Weinstein Books. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. If you missed one of our recent programs, they're available online anytime at publicradiotulsa.org. Just find Studio Tulsa and look through our archives. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.